This week on Making Contact.
For the last 3 years, I've been to Richmond talking to senators, and I have certainly found out that most of those senators has no idea of what goes on in those prisons.
A growing coalition of criminal justice reform activists are fighting for change, and they're doing it in a way that may surprise you.
We have power. It is your job to educate yourself on the political powers and who we need to move out and who we don't, and take it to your family, your friends, your community.
On this edition, we'll hear how the Thousand Kites Theater production is transforming Americans' views on prisons, one community at a time. I'm Tina Rubio, and this is Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information. A Thousand Kites is a nationwide project that enables the families of prisoners to educate the public about problems within the criminal justice system. But this group doesn't give lectures. Instead, they use music, theater, and audience participation to get their messages across. In a special program produced by WMMT Radio at Apple Shop in Whitesburg, Kentucky, we'll hear how the Thousand Kites project went from the airwaves to the stage in Virginia and Mississippi.
In 1982, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, America spent just under $36 billion on criminal justice. By 2003, that figure ballooned to $185 billion. Today, more than 2.4 million Americans are locked up. 50 new prisons have been built every year for the past 20 years, many of them located in rural communities where jobs are scarce. One such place is Central Appalachia, where for almost 100 years, coal was king. With the collapse of the coal economy, the region began looking for a new industry. Wallens Ridge, a state-of-the-art supermax prison, opened in 1999. Inmates were brought in from cities, some as far away as Hartford, Connecticut, and Albuquerque, New Mexico. Inmates felt cut off from their culture and loved ones until an Apple Shop DJ started a call-in show for prisoners and their families.
What's your message you want to send out this evening?
We'd like to say Merry Christmas to Rob Park. JC, tell your daddy Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. I miss you. Call me.
The landscape of rural Appalachia was changing. More and more, politicians began to see prisons as an answer to economic hard times.
If anybody's going to be picky about what jobs you get, when you're hungry, honey, you'll take a job. I mean, I don't know of anybody or any part of the country can say, well, we're not going to take this kind of job, we're not going to take that kind of job.
My community is now a prison community. And I was fairly amazed at how quickly my neighbors adjusted to the idea that we were now a prison community and no longer a coal mining community. Didn't blink. So you ask them about it. What do you think about that prison? Well, I don't know. Who do you think's up there? I don't know. Who do you think works there? I really don't know.
To answer questions like these, Apple Shop decided to intensify its work on the prison issue. It began a project called Thousand Kites. In prison slang, to fly a kite is to send a message. Apple Shop began collecting the experiences of prisoners and their loved ones, and corrections officers and their families. Their stories, poems, and raps became a new play.
I am guard. Not one guard, but many.
I am prisoner. Not one prisoner, but many.
I'm short, tall, all shades of color.
Male, female, vicious, kind.
Don't give a damn. I do time in 8-hour shifts.
I do time all the time.
This play, Thousand Kites, was made in such a way that it could be performed in any setting, with community members playing all the parts.
We have a lady named Julia who really wants to be involved in it. So we can put Julia in that role there. And then I'll take the chorus one. Do you want one or the five?
For one or five, it doesn't matter. I can do five.
I chose the prisoner part because I actually was a prisoner for 6 years of my life. So I'm not proud of it, but I'm not ashamed of it.
Every story that we tell here today, I mean, is something I've heard my sons say over the years. And I can't even think about where he's at.
Negativity is engraved in the mind of the slave who walks around those prison yards content in his grave. Nah, he don't want to be saved because he's afraid of life. He'd rather hold tight while the fam visits the site and drop flowers off in the form of currency, because currently he's lying under 6 feet. His bed is a far cry from home. His state number is the tombstone where they buried his bones. Grave, prison, yards.
This radio broadcast comes from the community readings of Thousand Kites staged in Jackson, Mississippi, and two places in Virginia, Richmond and the rural Appalachian community of Lebanon. The play is performed to generate a discussion about prison issues among cast and audience. In each community conversation, the public's misconception of who's actually in prison was the first issue to come up.
Well, I think we all look at Law and Order and Oz and many of these other shows that depict the violent criminal, the murderer, the rapist, child molesters. We believe that that's who we're incarcerating, and they make up less than 5%. And the reality is that we're putting a lot more people away for simple drug possession charges, distribution charges, fraud, bank embezzlement, things that are, yes, damaging to a society, but no real public safety threat.
Politically, they want to give a false impression of us. You know what I'm saying? We animals. Sure, it's guys in those places that, probably need to be in those places. But you have a lot of other brothers, a lot of other sisters who's trying to make a transition to get their life back together.
My son, he was charged with two Oxycontin pills and a tiny bit of cocaine, and he was given 15 years in prison. The same week as his trial, they had a guy that had murdered his wife, and he only gets 8 years.
We were shackled at the ankles. Our hands were cuffed in front of us and chained to our waist with a belly chain. The CO who was wielding a shotgun yells, "This ain't church, this ain't school, this ain't a place to rehabilitate yourself. It's prison."
I was in a place like that for 24 years. Mm-hmm. And I felt just sitting there, I was all those years come back to me. Because you are in a situation which you have no control of your own life. You told when to go to the bathroom, you told when to eat, you told when to stand up, you told when to walk, you told when to talk, you told to do everything. You don't have a life anymore.
I was a correctional officer. So when I was here tonight, I closed my eyes and the young lady who was doing the part about giving the schedule, it seemed to move real slow and methodical, and that's the way prison life is.
Schedule, maximum security, 6 a.m., breakfast, segregation food cart delivered.
Even as a correction officer, I was also in prison, and I recognized that. Interesting enough, the penitentiary is in the heart of the ghetto where I grew up. So many of the people, once I got there, I realized, damn, that's why I haven't seen you in the hood. You're in here. So I was in a place with people that I knew. So I made a decision. I am not going to mistreat people because it comes back around.
A lot of the correction officers had never been dealt with anybody that was from the cities. We were all from around here. And I think a lot of them, it went to their head. They liked that authority and that badge and all of that. We didn't understand each other, I guess you could say. And we were told, you don't need to be talking about anything that goes on at this prison when you're off work. You need to keep your mouth shut, not say anything. When you go into a place like that every day and it's hopeless, and that's what it is, hopeless, it does change you.
My girl was just a baby when I left. Thank God I get to see her now. I love you, Scott. But I had my share of heartache and pain in the system. But I did learn one thing, brother. When I seen the penitentiary system, I said to myself, I will not become penitentiary.
I was an inmate for 3.5 years, and all we ask is that you give us a chance to be able to come out into the world and to live our lives the way that we should have lived them before we were incarcerated.
Prisons don't even profess to be rehabilitative, and so it's up to the family and the church, and it becomes very difficult.
What a waste of people being incarcerated doing absolutely nothing. We should be in the business of saving lives through rehabilitation and weeding out those who have rehabilitated from those who have not.
Schedule, 8:30 a.m. Prisoner count standing.
You want to know what my days are like? Well, let's start with this bright ass light. Comes on at 5:30 in the morning and stays on forever. Never even notice the night. Truth be told, no matter what prison you're at, you're still locked up, and that's a fact. 6:30, mail call. Some guy stand at the door.
Although my son has been in prison for 11 years, I did not realize what a day was like. The part about the mail and how they wait and hope to get a letter or something from somebody has really showed me how much it means to him, because he's always very casual when he says, I didn't get any mail today, nobody wrote me. But I think he's really crying and hollering out, I need something to help make this time go by.
It's hard to go and see your son and all. One week he may be okay, but the next week he may be bitter because he's in there for so long. And we're not against prisons and all, but we're against this long term and the way they're treated in there and the way we're treated as criminals too. When they incarcerate your child, they incarcerate the whole family.
He was way, way far away where I couldn't even visit him. He was abused while he was there. And the phone calls trying to support him were unbelievable costs for me. But I did it because it needed to be done.
Circles just keep getting smaller each day. My family and friends have all fell by the way. I'm doing time with the other ones who have to pay. I'm running around in circles that just keep getting smaller each day.
The judge said, I have no sympathy and I have no empathy for you, for my son. He did not hurt anybody. He did not kill nobody. He did not rob anybody. He did not physically cause no one any harm, but he received a stiff sentence. Moving forward, when my son first went into prison, he refused to see us. They sent him to Wallens Ridge, which is a supermax. He's never been in prison. He's never even been fingerprinted. He's only had traffic, so this is a shock, locked down 23 hours. He felt his life was over. The first year, we didn't think he would make it. I really, truly didn't think he would make it through prison. I thought he would probably commit suicide. However, we are a very close and religious family, and we refuse. We kept going with him. We kept sticking. We kept it going. And family kept coming down to visit him. My brothers, sisters, his father, everyone would fly in, come visit him. It was a long trip. But the point is, today, 5 years later, he's returned back to college. He's one of the very few given permission to take correspondence classes. He tutors other inmates who can't read or write. He tutors with them. I can put it this way. When family people come to visit, they haven't seen him, they thought they came to cheer him up, and they leave with him cheering them up.
Sparkling coils of razor-tipped ribbon atop a metal mesh of fence freshly washed by rain. The glint of sun on gray metal, glistening helix with tiny teeth, carefully designed to cut cloth and flesh, now catches sparks of sun. A scintillation, a moment's hesitation, helices bejeweled with diamonds. I seek the treasure in the trap, the joy in the despair, the beauty that was not intended, but can be seen and kept as a gift. A gift.
The poem you just heard, Fence Jewels, was written by an inmate. The poems, raps, and stories in the play come from prisoners, their loved ones, corrections officers, and their families. After each performance, members of the audience share how their personal stories connect to the experiences portrayed in the play. Each evening ends with the audience and cast talking about ways to reform prison policy.
It cannot go on like this. My son has been locked up 5 years now. He's been tossed in 7 different prisons since he's been locked up in 5 years. 2 years ago, he spent a year in Red Onion, which is a maximum 6 prison. And he's a level 1. And there were 4 people killed, documented and killed just that 1 year. The public does not know it. And once when it gets out the right way and the word gets out the right way, there are going to be a lot of politicians going to have to pack their suitcase and they're going to be looking for another job, because we are in a serious shape in the state of Virginia.
For the last 3 years, I've been to Richmond talking to senators for the first time in my life, and I can talk to them just as easy as I can talk to you. And I have certainly found out that most of those senators has no idea of what goes on in those prisons.
And never been hardly in a big city like Richmond. And on the first time we went by ourselves, and I didn't know where everything was, where everybody was, you know, staying. But I wanted to tell these senators and delegates, you know, what's going on and, you know, how wrong our laws are. And I'm not educated or anything, but I just tell them what's in my heart.
6 years ago, I was incarcerated, and seeing that there's things I can do, and not being afraid to walk up to the legislators or whomever and talk about things. And of course, 3 years ago, I probably wouldn't have talked about some of the intimate things that have happened to me. I was actually sexually assaulted while I was incarcerated. You know, I wasn't protected. Officers allowed it to occur. But my assailant was HIV positive. And because of that, I'm now HIV positive. And in all my determination to make things change, things that I saw wrong, I don't think, if it wasn't for that experience, that I would be reminded and as committed to do, you know, what I set out the changes to make.
Go to these people and write that bill that she's saying. I believe that there is power in the pen.
You need to exercise your power. We have power. It is your job to educate yourself on the political powers and who we need to move out and who we don't, and take it to your family, your friends, your community. We gotta stop beating our heads against the wall. We got to start going around these people who are trying to oppress us and keep us back from having what is rightfully, we shouldn't even have to be fighting for. It's as simple as that. And I get so many people tell me, I'm praying for you. No, you know what? Pray for us, but get up and walk with us.
You just heard a production of WMMT Radio, a project of Apple Shop in Whitesburg, Kentucky. Coming up next,
all these new, you know, prisons just keep a popping up. And, you know, until you get someone in there, you don't know what it's all about.
You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or for CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. You can also download programs or get our podcast at radioproject.org. We now return to A Thousand Kites.
I'm Elsie Gray from Southwest Virginia, Lebanon, Virginia.
Elsie is involved in the Thousand Kites project.
And I have a son that is in prison. He was given 15 years for two OxyContin pills and 1.99 grams of cocaine.
She says much of what we think we know about the criminal justice system is inaccurate. She shares her story with Making Contact's Elena Bakken-Levy.
Then, got with some groups about the, you know, prison system. And we go to Richmond each year and talk to the legislators and try to inform them about some laws that need to be changed. The telephone bills are $6.99 for the families to call home. And we have a lot of people in our area that cannot afford these calls. The children, you know, need to be talking to their parents while they're in prison, and they need communication. And then Virginia has no parole, and we work on things like that and try to get better treatment in the prison so that they can come out and be, you know, better citizens, because they could be your neighbor, somebody else's neighbors, and you would, you know, like for them to be better people.
And how about the Thousand Kites Project?
I have a group in Lebanon, Virginia. We meet every third Friday of the month, and we're a support group, plus going to Richmond and talking to the legislators and going to our local legislators. And then we met with the Apple Shop because they were concerned about the prison system, and all these new prisons just keep popping up. And you know, until you get someone in there, you don't know what it's all about. And so when they wanted to do a play on this, Donna Porterfield came to one of our meetings. And then we, you know, sat in a circle and each one told their story. And she wrote a story about it to do the play with, pick something from each family. Then they started coming to our areas to perform the play, and we used members of our group to act the parts. We were one of the first, you know, to do it. And then they had some people with them, and they acted as, you know, all different branches of the CO. Some were COs, and some of them were inmates as the parts in the prison and as the parents. And it informed our public on what was going on in the prisons.
So tell me more about the work you've been doing putting on the Thousand Kites Project.
We got a local church to let us use their building, and then I put out flyers everywhere so that people would know about it. And we had different people to come, teachers and some that worked in the law enforcement offices, and different people come because they were interested in what was going on, you know, when it was a play about a prison, and then got a people's opinions afterward then.
And what was the response from audience and community? What kinds of discussions were you able to have after the performances?
Well, there wasn't a dry eye, and they interviewed, you know, the people that had been in prison, because we had some in our play that had been in prison. And then, you know, the families got to speak, which, you know, they were heartbroken over it. And then the public, they didn't realize that this was going on in the prisons and all. And then we had one girl that came, her professor at a college, send her to, you know, hear about it. And, you know, the public were really surprised at what was going on in the prisons, even from the, you know, COs that work there.
Do you feel like there'll be a change in your community as a result of these performances?
Yes, I believe it will because, you know, the people are getting educated about it now because they didn't realize how the prison system worked.
And so now they have a sense of how it works?
Yes, how it affects the families, how it affects the ones that work there, and how it affects the inmates.
What kind of action do you see people taking now?
We have a few more people coming to our meetings now that don't have anybody in prison. You know, it helps get people to come to a group that have someone in prison because it helps the boys out so much to know, boys and girls, to know, you know, that somebody is trying to do something for them, that cares about them.
What did you like about the format of A Thousand Kites as a theater performance?
That it involved the whole system, the ones that works there, the ones that have families there, and the ones that's been, you know, inmates, that it covered all areas of it. You know, people that hear it can't say, well, that's just one side, that's the people that's in prison or the moms and dads.
We've been speaking with Elsie Gray, who lives in Lebanon, Virginia. Her son is serving a 15-year prison sentence, and that's why she got involved with A Thousand Kites. Is there anything else that you want to add, Elsie?
No, that we just need, you know, some changes in our legislature and not just lock them up and throw away the key and keep building more prisons because... So many of them, people don't realize who's in prison and all. And with the no parole, when they voted for it, they thought it was for the real, real bad offenders, you know, murders and things. But it affects the ones that's just with, you know, minor charges. And with, you know, the drugs, most of our people locked up are their own drug offenses, you know, and they need rehabilitation, not prison. And the cost of, you know, keeping them in there, you know, how that could go to rehab and let them come out and be better citizens.
The U.S. prison population numbers 2.1 million. One of every 138 Americans has done time. 32% of African American males and 17% of Latino males have been incarcerated.
Prisons are thug mansions. Wondering whatever happened. Why do we have so many brothers in the jail?
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. Part of today's program, A Thousand Kites, was from a special broadcast created by WMMT Radio at Apple Shop in Whitesburg, Kentucky. For more information, go to thousandkites.org. Special thanks to Dan Turner, Ron Rucker, and the Monday Morning Breakfast Crew. For a CD copy of this program, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736. Or you can get our podcast at radioproject.org. Lisa Rudman is our executive director, Andrew Stelzer producer, Puck Lowe associate producer, Elena Bakken-Levy and Aubrey Green interns, and I'm Tina Rubio. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.